good stuff about it. Everybody knows it anyway. You know, we're here to the good graces of the way the facade, as long as we spend 80 pesos on stay for dinner.
Each.
Yes, each. On the way down here, I was walking with John. I was going to ask if anybody had any presentations or any talks they want to make for future.
In the future.
Do you want to try your numerology? Do you want to try your numerology?
Numerology.
Well,
alright.
No, for the for future. For future meeting.
Try it out here first.
Yeah. Okay.
Good idea.
And John had a suggestion that we all take turns talking about our, kicking this, but I don't have to talk for you, you're right there.
My suggestion to Phil was, if there's interest, that we have a meeting where all of us, or all who choose, present a short presentation, I'm thinking 3 or 4 minutes, of their favorite atheist.
Oh.
Somebody they admire, somebody that has had some impact on their life, and that way if you have 10 people speaking for 3 or 4 minutes, no doubt discussion would flow and it would give lots of opportunity for participation, and I would do my 3 minutes, and I'm pretty confident I would pick an atheist nobody else would.
Okay.
Well,
do we? What is that? An acceptable
for a future meeting?
Yeah.
You probably want something in advance from everybody, just to make sure you know the enough content.
Yeah.
Oh, that we're not all picking the same person.
Oh, that's okay too. Well,
it depends on the impact that person made on your life.
So
I'd be willing.
Yeah, the list. Can you? If I send you something, can you distribute it to?
Yes, but we're going to need. Like I said, I think we're going to need to know how much stuff we have. If there's only 3 people that have prepared something, that's going to be a dud.
Yeah. I would suggest you probably need 10 people. You know.
But sent out far enough in advance, people should come prepared if they want to talk. I guess they don't have to if they don't want to.
Okay. Well, we can give it a shot.
Yeah, I can do that as soon as I get home, to send out something soliciting volunteers for this. We'll see what kind of feedback we get.
Okay.
So let's say you can't pick Dawkins or Hutch.
Why? You got the, they're yours?
Hitchens?
No, I'm afraid everybody might pick one of those two.
No.
Well, they are my favorites.
Yes. Okay. I was thinking the next meeting, something on where artificial intelligence might take us.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when our intellect is surpassed?
Mm-hmm.
I'll see.
I'm sure there's good topics that could be generated around that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because it is changing every day.
That would be a
roundtable
discussion, or would you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd just have a little preamble.
You would.
Yeah.
Or anyone.
And just to raise the issue. Yeah.
These talks are all roundtable. They start with a presentation and then a discussion.
Yeah. I have a little bit of concern, but not a real strong one. That we seem to be drifting away from anti-religious things.
Okay.
We're more getting quite more intellectual and philosophical. Now, I can tie this all to free thinking, but we seem to be drifting into the intellectual faith area, which maybe everybody.
No, that's a good point.
Well, last year we discussed what kinds of topics we thought were appropriate.
Yeah.
Philosophy, science, religion, you know, just exactly how broad did we want to go? Could we move away from religion and still call it a freethinkers meeting?
Yeah.
Yes, and we agreed that we should.
And
I'm just thinking we're kind of lifting over there.
Sometimes though, I mean, we're all atheists. it's difficult to spark a debate when we're all in so much agreement.
Well, some are more atheists than others. Yeah.
But I mean, if you have ideas, you know, yeah, I mean,
like I said,
I can defer. You know, we can have an atheist-based meeting next time. I'm just, I can defer. Well, I bet nothing on artificial intelligence.
All the atheist-based meetings, and I agree that these discussions do tie to atheism. I mean, you got to be a critical thinker to be an atheist, and so that's where you branch off into whatever.
Oh well, I have a problem with that. If you're excluding everybody who is not an atheist, I think then you get involved in your own kind of small club.
But there's no exclusion.
No, there should not be any exclusion.
But the topic would be about atheism.
The topic could be about atheism.
Yeah.
But if you're excluding that we all become in some ways, because what growing much older, I changed not ever being religious, but like the idea of not knowing. And absolutely open thinking, free thinking, because this last week's in reading Stevens and Ken Crosby's and all of, I'm sorry to say, but I thought that got caught up so much in kind of this philosophical debate that did not broaden the aspect, and it was ending up in...
What didn't you like?
I think, having been in the educational system I was at St. John's, that we get caught up too much in sometimes the wording, the cubicle. And St. John's was that kind of situation that found yourself in trying to outdo each other in this kind of philosophical wording, grande, wording.
So you didn't find any content, just...
Sounds like Kim.
Yeah.
No, I think his stuff is very unsubstantial.
Yeah.
Don't always agree with that, but I don't agree with that comment.
Yeah, no, well, I just needed it. I thought what it did to clarify and get down to maybe a purification of the wording, and I'm sorry, Stephen, but I was reading all of it, and I thought,
It's also a male thing.
Everything's not for everybody.
That's true.
And it's a male-dominated group so far as I've been.
Exactly, because I did write something and it did not show up.
So it is a way of interacting among males that you don't see so often.
You wrote something that didn't show up. Mm-hmm. How where did you send it?
I was responding back to them. Stephen or whatever during your
check your drive.
Did you respond to the list?
You sent me an email.
Yeah, I just got involved with yours and Ken's and whatnot.
Did you contact us? I don't remember that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, no. That's a concern because it's supposed to show up. If you respond to the list,
right? I should respond.
Are you
I don't think anybody's censoring anyone. List of
No, there's no censoring going on. So.
If you sent me an email, I didn't ignore it. I either didn't get it or
it's okay. It's okay because I can.
Because what?
What's your forward?
Nobody's ignoring you.
No, the reason I'm asking is because it's not. There's no censoring going on.
Yeah.
And so if you're either doing something wrong or there's something wrong with the program that's doing the list. I want to get to the bottom of
the list. Because I'm on the list. I get all of it,
How did you respond? Did you just hit reply?
I don't remember.
Well, try it later on when you get back.
Just try it again and make sure that...
Yeah. Okay, you guys are bullshitting.
Why do you keep talking like this to us? Valerie?
I know.
It's been all negative from you.
Oh, yes, I know. Because Barbara Bush called Clinton Hillary a bitch.
Well, don't take it out of us, okay? Don't take that out of us, okay?
Let's get back on track.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, today's was... topic was, how do we know what we know?
Oh, but I did want to, as I told you, I did want to...
Oh, yeah, if you want to give a brief...
yeah, because the last time we talked about Norman Vincent Peale and the his book on positive thinking. And so in the beginning, when she's not here, she gave that presentation, which was very good, and I made a remark that it was in the 1940s that Vincent Peale wrote that, and inside my head, that little man was hitting my brain, and I thought, oh, I'm wrong. So when I went home, I was thinking about Dale Carnegie, and, you know, How to Make Friends and Influence People, which was 1946. Norman Vincent Peale actually was the theory of positive thinking came out in 1959. What I found out, because we all got involved with Trump and the whole conversation, what I found out was that Norman Vincent Peale, Donald Trump's father, the family, were members of Vincent Peale's church. And we all said Riverside and stuff like this, Marblegate. And so that's who, why Donald Trump grew up with Norman Vincent Peale. And then Norman Vincent Peale wrote a book claiming that he created Donald Trump through his theory of positive thinking. He actually wrote a book and published it. So,
okay.
So it came as a shock to me. And because we got involved with, you know, positive thinking, yeah. Somebody that does that all the time, that is egocentric, you know. Yeah. So Norman Vincent Peale takes credit for creating Donald Trump.
I don't know where the credit is, but anyway. Okay. Thanks. The presentation that we had from Charles about the 9/11 truth or debate. Mm. I've been in contact with Charles since November, and I told him I didn't want his presentation about what is the truth about 9/11. I said, you know, you're going to be... It's a pointless argument. But what I did want to know was why he believed what he did and why I believed what I did. Because it was... certainly most of the facts were not in dispute, as I thought. And listening to him, I thought, you know, that type of debate never happened. He basically came with his presentation and went right ahead and did it. But I was thinking, how can I refute some of the claims that he made? And they seemed obvious, and they seemed to appeal to common sense, but I wasn't quite sure whether my common sense was enough to cut the mustard. I wasn't sure it was sufficient enough. So I wanted to look at the formation of belief, what's wrong with it, what's right with it? What's its limitations? Are there things we accept on faith as free thinkers, as critical thinkers? So that's the preamble to what I've just got a little bit to read. And, whatever the area in which we work, some people imagine that beliefs about the world are formed mechanically from straightforward reasoning, or that they pop into existence fully formed as a result of clear and distinct perceptions of the world. But if the business of knowing things were so simple, we'd all agree on a bunch of things that we currently disagree about. And that we do not reach such an agreement means there is something wrong with that model of belief formation. And it is interesting that we individually tend to think of ourselves as clear thinkers, and see those who disagree with us as misguided. We imagine the impressions we have about the world come to us unsullied and unfiltered. We think we have the capacity to see things just as they really are, and that is, it is others who have confused perceptions. As a result, we might think our job is simply to point out where other people have gone wrong in their thinking, rather than to engage in rational dialogue, allowing for the possibility that we might actually be wrong. But not only are we in the grip of a staggeringly complex array of cognitive biases and dispositions, but we are generally ignorant of their role in our thinking and decision-making. Combine this ignorance with the conviction of our own epistemic superiority, and you can begin to see the magnitude of the problem. Appeals to common sense to overcome the friction of alternative views just won't cut it. Now, what I did next was a list of five different ways of knowing. Mm. The first one is informal observation. This occurs when we make observations without any systematic process for observing or assessing the accuracy of what we observed. Selective observation occurs only when we see only those patterns that we want to see, or when we assume that only the patterns that we have experienced directly exist. Overgeneralization occurs when we assume that the broad patterns exist even when our observations have been limited. Authority, a socially defined source of knowledge that might shape our beliefs about what is true and what is not true. And finally, we have research methods, an organized, logical way of learning and knowing about our world. And obviously, research methods implies science. Now, science has proven itself to be the best estimates of the truth, to provide the best estimates of the truth, i.e. what things are really like, based on evidence and processes which anyone, given the time and willingness to learn, can use to replicate, validate, and estimate the estimates of truth generally accepted by the scientific community. If they are very good and very lucky, they may even create new estimates of truth not previously known or accepted today. Now, are there actual truths that the scientific process is not able to evaluate? Perhaps, but without a method for me to replicate, validate those truths, what good are they? I can say for me, they provide nothing good and tend to waste valuable time and human resource that could be better spent making our world a better place for us all. Clearly, the scientific method is a powerful tool, but it does have its limitations. These limitations are based on the fact that a hypothesis must be testable and falsifiable, and that experiments and observations be repeatable. This places certain topics beyond the reach of the scientific method. I had a little piece here about critical realism, which says that there are limits to what we can actually know or describe about the world around us. Not so much in the questions that can be asked in the precise detail and lowest level of explanation that we can achieve. That being said, critical realism posits that observations and explanations do, in fact, correspond to reality and they're not just human constructs. Therefore, we can know, but we know that we cannot know everything that there is to know, you know? Mm. So, there's a little bit about the future, but I wanted to address Charles's notion that his explanations were scientific, and that what I could refute was also scientific, and I found it difficult. I find it difficult to say, well, what is reproducible about 9/11? What is testifiable?
Right, it was a one-off event.
Yeah.
If ever there was one.
Yeah. And given the scale of it, you know, we can't build another World Trade Center and see whether planes do actually, you know, disintegrate before they hit or...
I had to leave, unfortunately, at 5 o'clock that day because I had another thing and I didn't get to hear how far it went. So I don't know whether he presented alternatives or did he say there were no airplanes or did he say there were thermite charges distributed all around the building?
All of the above.
Yeah.
He
didn't. Yeah. And basically, the first plane was a disguised missile.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. And the second one was a hologram.
So I think there's another one to add to your list, and that is we also decide what we believe by listening to what other people believe and waiting around for somebody who was part of this conspiracy
after all these years, have they all been silenced? Mm-hmm. Certainly not all dead. Isn't there somebody who wants to go on, you know, TV and with his pictures story. And his revelations and write a book? Well, apparently not.
It does sound...
And that in itself, to me, is enough. I mean, knowing what I know about people, mm-hmm. if there really was anyone alive who had gone around and planted bombs in the World Trade Center, which is a ridiculous idea on the face of it, as far as I can see.
Well, my problem with Charles was, I spoke to him before he gave that presentation, our meeting before, and a high school classmate of mine, a quarterback for the football team, became very famous as a great expert on fire, and is with the National Organization, Association of Firefighters, and Olin was asked immediately after to examine how the buildings fell with fire. Knowing Olin, I was really amazed, he graduated Georgia Tech, that his report was really very detailed and very excellent and very believable. And when I said that to Charles, he said, he was paid off.
Well,
so I thought, so he totally dismissed the ability to see the other side or the falsity. And so I didn't come because I don't want to deal with somebody who immediately tells me that my high school quarterback was paid off by an organization.
I missed that part. It was the quarterback of your high school?
Yeah, Olin went on to be the quarterback for Georgia Tech. And, you know, high school quarterbacks are usually not that brilliant, but Olin turned out to be.
But Charles showed us quite a few graphs that look very scientific.
Yeah, I saw.
And he belongs to a group that are bunch of engineers.
I've seen that.
He was a pilot.
He was a pilot, commercial pilot, and an engineer.
Yeah,
so he had credentials too.
He had credentials. It's
That's
like, what am I? What? From what position am I challenging some of his?
Yeah.
Right.
His information.
Yeah.
And I found myself, you know, looking for that stable rock which to challenge him.
Yeah, right or wrong, he came across as sincere and informed.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah.
So I mean, he had that going for him.
And logical.
Yeah, but...
You know, I mean, he was saying that it was nothing that was illogical. It was a little unreasonable.
He presented a few claims of fact that I couldn't verify were true or not.
Yeah.
I had no way to confirm them, and then his interpretation of them.
Yeah.
Well, one thing he did say that I did look up afterwards was that there were no pieces of planes lying around.
That's right.
And I looked up the Pentagon, and there were lots of pieces of planes lying around.
There were a lot.
So that was clearly not true. And you know what? He could have been suppose he had all of his credentials, and he were arguing something absurd like the Earth is flat. Even with all of his credentials, that doesn't matter what kind of credentials you have. If you're arguing something absurd, it's still absurd.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So the fact that you're a PhD in whatever doesn't matter if you're still nutty.
But that wasn't being offered as evidence that he was correct, just that that he should know what he's talking about.
But apparently he doesn't.
I mean, I'm agnostic on the situation. I have never been convinced that the United States government was not involved, but I'm not saying they were.
Okay, but it comes down to kind of probabilities, doesn't it?
Yes,
you got to kind of say, well, okay, there's a one in a you know 10 to the 9th chance of that, but there's a 1 in 2 chance of this.
I don't assess it like that. Not that extreme.
Well,
yeah.
I think holograms and missiles and,
well,
and people putting in charges and stuff like that.
I'm not taking Charles' answer.
And all the people disappeared. And,
exactly.
It's way out there compared to some crazy Arabs, you know, hijacked the plane.
Yeah, I fly, and his attitude about the planes also not being able to fly that low. If you ever flew into Hong Kong, the old airport, you were coming right down through the buildings, you know.
Well, they obviously can fly that low because they land.
I was hoping I could land.
They didn't quite land. They ran into something, but the same thing.
I think, Stephen, your last email also came out about the truth, you know.
Which one are you referring to? I don't remember.
The last one you wrote, just about this meeting and whatnot. You don't remember what you wrote.
You're talking about the announcement to the Lakeside Freethinkers?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, actually, I didn't write that.
Oh, you didn't? Oh.
No, did you see it was signed by Philip?
Oh, okay. Because you don't believe in the truth either. But I always have problems with bringing up the truth, having been in a seminar with Plato's dialogue on truth. Who knows?
I think it's almost difficult on conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
You know, because it was a conspiracy, right? It
would have happened.
It was just a conspiracy.
Both theories.
We just disagree who was conspiring
exactly.
To do it.
Both theories are conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
One involves only Arabs, and one involves more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the problem also with, if you're in law school, and as we know, they usually do this thing where somebody comes right into the class and does something incredible and then runs out. And then they ask the students, you know, what did you see? And everybody sees something different.
Yeah.
And also, I think, us all being the age we are, if you go back and listen to getting a family reunion or something, and the way your siblings or something remember an event, and you're sitting there in shock. What? That didn't happen that way.
But is
everybody has a different kind of vision of their reality. Their reality. Your reality is different. You live in your reality. They're living in another reality that doesn't integrate with your reality.
But as critical thinkers, is there a methodology that we can use to observe something that is unreproducible and untestifiable?
You have to be ready for it when it happens. I mean, the people watching what happened in New York on that day were totally unprepared to take any notes or be good observers. That guy who looks up, you know, that film, the very first picture of it, where the guy's digging a hole in the street. And if you were to ask him, what did you see? We're already, all of us, remembering not the events that we've had lived through, but when we remembered them the last time. That's really what you're remembering when you remember an event. This is interesting information that's coming out. When you remember something, the original event is long gone. You're remembering it. And it's been, every time you remember, you lay the track down again and you reinforce it. But it's different.
Or you change it.
Other people around. I mean, what you say is true. People say, no, he wasn't there at that time, and I have a clear memory of whatever it may be, you know, or my mother would say, no, you've got that all wrong.
Well,
he tells me, you know, it's getting more and more like that, actually, recent.
I wasn't there, so I have to trust other sources.
Mm-hmm. Eyewitnesses, even. Hmm? Well, eyewitnesses.
Well, we have video, and Charles is even discrediting the video.
Yeah.
He said, that's not a plane, that's a hologram. I mean, come on.
That was, he was stretching it by that point, obviously.
Well, I do find it interesting that where there in the past where you could always have some form of disagreement about a memory of something like what happened when you were a child with your sibling, it shifts things when there is some form of evidence, specifically recording evidence, audio or video, because they tend to come with time stamps and you can recreate fairly faithfully timelines that resets your memory. I've been working on a memoir, and there's a period of time I remember occurring basically from here to here, or 18 months, maybe 2 years. And when I went back and looked at the documentation in my resume and in the different paperwork that gave me dates that I could then frame that time with, it turned out to have all transpired within 6 months, over and done with. And that wasn't how I remembered it at all, but still, yes, obviously someone could come in and see a video and still imagine a different scenario.
Yeah, you got the evidence is fine, but
it pushes you
the interpretation of the evidence
to the fringe. You have to go farther to the fringe of believability in order to be able to do that.
But is the fringe? Does that automatically make it wrong? I guess that's it just because it's fringe.
It reduces the likelihood of it being correct. So I think you get into the scenario where, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, may not be the
exact. It makes it different.
Grid culture.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it different.
What's that?
What you were asking. Does it make it right or does it make it wrong?
Yeah.
No, it's just different.
It's different, but
without,
is that...
Without the labeling,
yeah,
of, oh, I don't agree with it because I don't agree with it.
But is it a qualitative difference that you can say this is more probable than something else?
You know, I have a bit of an experience. I was a licensed international wrestling official, Olympic-style wrestling. And the format is, there's three officials on the mat. One's close to the action, the other is called a judge, and he's out at the outside the circle of the wrestling area. And the third is the chair at the scoring table. And the rules require that two out of three must agree on the action for the points that are awarded. Well, the fellow with the whistle, he's real close to the action, so he has one view of things. The judge has a longer distance view from the outside. If the mat official and the judge agree and award 2 points or 3 points or whatever, that's good. But if there's a disagreement because they've seen the same thing differently, then the chair has to make the conclusion. If one says 2 points, another says 3 points, and the chair can't say 4 points, and there is a 4 point award. It has to either be the two or the three. But they're seeing it all from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. It isn't that anybody's more correct than the other. It's just that they're seeing it from a different vantage point. So the third party then has to conclude and say, that's right. That doesn't make the guy on the mat wrong for what he saw.
Is there a stipulated thing that differentiates 2 points from 3 points and something that is a definite fact that happens?
Yeah.
So it's a question of whether it happened and then who saw it.
But how it was seen.
How it was seen is really how the points get awarded, not what should happen. Because how do you ever know that? I mean, that's really what we're talking about.
But
how do we ever really know?
Yeah, how do we really know?
Even if there are multi-viewpoint video cameras running all the time.
That's right.
You know,
this really brings up a higher thing that you were trying to talk about, I think, and that is there is truth. There is truth up there, and we can all look at it and interpret it differently, but it's still up there. It's something, in fact, happened.
Where is it?
Something happened. There is a truth that three people are trying to interpret it, but that their interpretation doesn't change what actually happened.
The first problem is it's gone in the past.
It's
inaccessible ever again.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's only. We will never reconstruct.
It's a reflection of what happened.
Right.
By two, and possibly involving a third person.
Yeah.
But none of them are.
But something did happen. And the 9/11 thing, did happen.
Uh-huh.
And whatever happened actually did happen.
Something happened.
Yeah. And it's true. It's true. That is truth up there.
And there is, so what you're saying, there is a full explanation that exists.
And that's why people believe in God.
Yeah. And can we know it? Or can we only approach it? What is our criteria for judging how close we are?
The scientific method, science, that's what I go back to.
Yeah. But then in these cases, this you can't repeat this. You can't repeat it.
No. Right. In the general sense, science.
Yes.
Not just for 9/11, but even 9/11, you can't repeat the event, but there's certainly a lot of things surrounding it that you can bring up, the videotapes, the eyewitnesses, the, you know.
Then it comes down to probabilities.
Right, yeah.
Does it
and
all?
That's a good point, because because when you're trying to find the truth, you can't find it, but you can find degrees of probability to that is so much that it's pretty difficult to deny. The theory of evolution, well,
becomes theory.
It's not really a theory so much anymore. In fact, 30, 50 years ago when I was in college, even then, the textbook didn't say the theory of evolution. It said the fact of evolution.
Well, today I think you hear him say both. The theory of evolution accounts for the fact of evolution. Evolution is observable. It's a fact. How does it happen? The theory tells you.
Right. I read your piece on that, and I agree 100%. Okay. We should all read that.
Should all the pieces have to fit together in order for it to be considered?
Before it comes up?
Well,
fit together before it comes
up? Yeah, I mean, you can raise issues of... You can raise doubts, right, of whether something is true or not. But then if raising those doubts create issues, downstream issues. For example, Charles mentioned three things that I thought were completely illogical. But only from my own common sense are they illogical. Number one was that the hijackers were alive and well and given interviews.
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Show me some proof of that.
Yeah, I know. The hijackers are alive and well. I'm very surprised to have been named.
Yeah, right.
They were ISIS, right?
They weren't on the plane.
It means they weren't on the plane.
Okay.
Right. They were trying to tell everyone, that wasn't me.
Yeah,
I swear. I'm right here.
But there's a lot of confusion with Arabic names.
John Smith is still here.
Yes. The second one was that one of the planes that had crashed was
in service.
It was still in service.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Now, after you spend all this resource.
I'm taking that flight on Wednesday, maybe.
When you spent all this treasure and resource destroying these buildings and getting rid of everything, you let a plane land and put it back in service. That sounded completely illogical.
Right.
Could I prove it? I checked that out, and it was based on an identification of a beacon signal from a plane, which are apparently unique to the planes.
Yeah, I understand.
And so that's how they, someone supposedly, I've seen the printouts of what supposedly is this, the beacon from one of the planes that had crashed earlier.
I'm guessing this wasn't in an official FAA publication.
No. No, it was before. But, you know, to take this situation further into today's situations, it is stunning, and it does make you gag and whatnot, is what people are believing now. I guess it was Jake Tapper last night with Fox News, and CNN has taken on a woman that worked for Fox News. And she says, well, it's really not news, it's opinion. So Hannity, we give out opinions, it's not news. And as Jake Tapper says, but you call it news.
Fair and balanced.
Fair and balanced news. And it is upsetting, I think, to all of us, how horrifying. And it's not only what's happening in the United States, who we know is happening in Hungary and other places in the world, that people are believing this kind of cultural lies. You know, we talk about the truth, but boy, I think we should be able to see more of the lies than trying to find the truth. I think the lies are more evident than sometimes the truth.
I think it's in 2016, one of the dictionaries labeled post-truth as their word of the year.
There's a new book out that Farad Zakaria recommended on Sunday, and it's called Post-Truth.
Yeah. Post-Truth, and it's basically, you know, opinion is a valid source of
truth.
Yes, truthiness.
Truthiness.
What was your first
issue with the?
What's that? It was the. The plane.
It goes too fast. They went too fast, most likely.
No.
Yeah, he said that planes can't go that fast. Those planes can't go.
Slow.
No,
it's completely calm.
I thought it was the speed.
The speed.
The issue, as I see it, to bring politics into this discussion, is that there are agendas behind political actions, political statements. So you can virtually believe nothing that is said. Now, I did work in Washington, D.C. in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left town, one of the things I held on to was, what's the story behind the story? It was never the headline. It was never the
backstory.
Never what somebody was saying about it. The backstory, or what was the story behind the story? So if you really want to know what the truths are, you got to investigate what's behind it. And typically there's going to be some money interest behind it.
Absolutely.
Most typically.
Absolutely.
But that can't taint everything.
But then...
You look at the... I hear Big Pharma all the time.
Politics is an arena by itself in that regard.
Yes.
But I hear this excuse that there's always an agenda tainting science. That science doesn't operate independently. There's always an agenda.
No, I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true either.
Well,
I think the reproducibility
people who are really curious and they want to know and they want to figure it out.
The differentiation between the scientific process, which I think is fairly safe, and scientific institution and individual scientists and the funding process,
that can
corrupt things, academic tenure, etc.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can shift things. But that doesn't mean science.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that every.
No,
this thing about generalization as a means to knowledge.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the pharmaceutical company now too.
Merck.
Or Big Pharma,
Merck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't go to the doctor. Don't take any pills the next time.
I have one hand for the moment.
One of the largest groups of respectable 9/11, I don't want to call them conspiracy people, but
truthers,
are the engineers and architects. They were the ones behind the largest group who were doing this and spend most of the money, and they have a bone to grind because they said this building can withstand an impact from a commercial airliner.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it didn't. So it's in their interest to prove that that's not what happened at all. And I don't know where they are now. Does anybody know? Are they still beating that horse?
I think that would only apply to the engineers who actually designed it.
No, the whole...
I think the rest of the engineers said if you'd
pick mine. It was the architect who designed the tower.
Right, but there was a professional
to take a 707 hit.
Yes, that's right.
I worked in World Trade, one of the towers, only for 2 weeks because, I'm a rather fearless person, but boy, on the 72nd floor, and the way that building, and all the spaces before it, to make it move with the, wind structure and whatnot was just... Absolutely, I quit after 2 weeks.
You could feel it moving, but that's a good sign.
But the thing about it, it seemed to me so vulnerable.
Yeah.
I just had this feeling of vulnerability.
Yeah.
But it was a feeling.
It was a feeling.
Louis saying that it was engineered.
I know, it was engineered. So
I think it is the impact. Isn't it said to be the fire that brought it down, not the impact?
Yes, it was the fire that weakened the joints that brought it down.
It did survive the impact.
Yes.
It was a fire, according to Olin Green, the quarterback.
It didn't go down when it got hit. It went down a little bit later.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my daughter was traumatized. She was opening her markets, so she was an international trader.
But how did you...
And so she was talking and opening her markets with the World Trade Center. She had worked in there and then moved with Kaufman, and opened international markets.
How do you model? a plane hitting the World Trade Center.
How do you model it?
Well, yeah, okay, so we don't have the ability to reproduce exactly physically.
Yeah.
But we can model it.
Yes.
And how close are them? How close are the models? I don't know whether anyone's read the book Stiff by Mary Roach. It's what happens to
people after they die.
Yeah, you read it?
Yeah.
And the ones that go to the car manufacturers, or the people who make the crash test dummies, they have to make sure that the crash test dummy behaves the same way as the person.
Right.
So they have to crash people.
Yeah.
Dead people.
Right.
So they can make the dummies, have the equivalent damage.
Right.
Than the people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're modeling something, in this case, it was relatively easy because you got some dead people.
You got lots of dead people.
You smash them, and then, you know, you can observe and make, you can measure the difference.
Right. Yeah.
What do you do on the, but how do you know whether it's...
I don't know, but they're doing great work in that area. You see them modeling galaxies forming, and
they
form right in the galaxies.
Yeah.
Well, they don't know if those work.
But
when was the World Trade Center constructed?
Oh, after
the original
19,
was it
after in 1970s?
No, it was late 70s. Before?
Well, I was in a World Trade Center building in the 70s.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So the computing power and software ability to model, you know, whatever they were testing for, air collisions was probably not nearly as sophisticated as what we would be able to produce now.
But you know,
so they have to just
then do it now.
Close, you know?
Then do it now. Use the specs of the building.
Yeah, they do a lot of things now, but still, you know, even with the high technology that we have today, it is interesting that what we have in our memory base, and when an event happens, and I think my first reaction to it was when a plane hit was 1937 when the plane hit the Empire State Building.
It was later then, but
a little somewhere around that time. So it was about the 82nd floor.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, that came in, and that's okay, because, you know, the building didn't collapse or anything. And it's strange what your memory does to bring it up without the technology to what was happening, you know, and I was watching television at that time. And then I think we believed at that time, it was kind of like the Empire State Building, that a plane hit the first tower.
I never heard of that. What kind of impact was it? Like a wing graze it, or did it fly
right into the Empire State Building, about the 82nd floor.
But it wasn't carrying tons of fuel.
No, it wasn't. But your memory has this event.
You made the association.
You make the association.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So there's actually a picture of the rear end of the plane sticking out of the Empire State. Uh-huh. You haven't seen
it? I think I have, but I don't think I believe it actually happened.
Oh, it happened.
It was all holograms.
It was all holograms. It might even have been a poster up on my wall.
Well,
there was one with King Kong on it.
Yeah.
Did King Kong really?
I think, you know, we were thinking, because my uncle, well, I lived outside New York at the time, but my uncle also worked in the Empire State Building, and I just think memory goes back to, well, you know, the Empire State Building didn't come down.
Mm.
And you conflict this event with what I saw happening. So I did not expect the second tower to hit. And so it's interesting to me what happens with your memory base and what you bring forth to another event. And when I gave tours in Europe, especially in Rome, I would tell everybody at that time, Watergate happened, and all the people in Watergate are alive, and they all wrote their own books, and they all told a different story. So all I'm gonna say is we know Watergate happened. And then I'm just gonna tell you all the stories about Rome, and you choose the story you like the best. Because we know nothing more than the event happened. We can't prove anything else or their attitudes or their visions of what happened. Mm. And that's what happened certainly in the World Trade situation.
I don't think so. We know a lot about what happened. We have,
but everybody's got different stories, like Charles.
But they're selling books.
Not everybody.
And they're co-authored by people who...
Yeah.
Yeah.
embellish
information.
Well, I have some, a lot of fun stories about Ram, and you can believe anyone you want.
There's a second part here. It's talking about the, you know, what the future holds for our belief systems and how we form beliefs. And it was actually when the BBC, Future Now, I don't know whether that was a program, interviewed a panel of 50 experts in early 2017 about the grand challenges we face in the 21st century. Many named the breakdown of trusted information sources. The major new challenge in reporting news is a new shape of truth, said Kevin Kelly, co-founder of Wired magazine. Truth is no longer dictated by authorities, but is networked by peers. For every fact, there is a counterfact, and all these counterfacts and facts look identical online, which is confusing to most people. So the fake news ecosystem preys on some of our deepest human instincts. Respondents said humans' primal quest for success and power, their survival instinct, will continue to degrade the online information environment in the next decade. They predicted that manipulative actors will use new digital tools to take advantage of humans' inbred preference for comfort and convenience and their craving for the answers they find in reinforcing echo chambers. And that our brains are not wired to contend with the pace of technological change. His respondent said that the rising speed, reach, and efficiencies of the internet and emerging online applications will magnify these human tendencies, and that technology-based solutions will not be able to overcome them. They predicted a future information landscape in which fake information crowds out reliable information. Some even foresaw a world in which widespread information scams and mass manipulation caused broad swaths of the public to simply give up on being informed participants in civic life.
It's already happened.
Oh, yeah.
2016 election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we were talking about, you know, can you trust your eyes?
Right.
Which I think Groucho Marx said this, who are you going to believe, you or your... Me or your lying eyes. Actually, he said, me or your eyes. And I think it was a baseball player was caught in bed with his wife. Who repurposed the phrase and said to his wife, who are you going to be, me or your lying eyes?
I just read that and I can't remember who the person was.
The original?
No, I just read that, what you're saying.
About
you
baseball
player? Yeah, are you going to trust me or your lion eyes? I just can't remember who I was reading that.
Sounds like a song.
I'm thinking Rodriguez, but I don't know whether...
The Eagles have a song, Lion Eyes.
Maybe it's time for philosophic dictator. Depends on the philosophy.
Marcus Aurelius, is everything.
How do we protect ourselves against this?
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's a great opportunity for...
That's really
to be manipulated. I mean, religion can, you know, put out its case.
Oh, yeah.
And before I came here, I watched a few videos on scientism.
Uh-huh.
And I hadn't really heard the arguments against scientism.
What is scientism?
It's basically treating science like a religion.
Well, there's two definitions. One is neutral. It's just a faith in science.
Yes. Yeah.
But the other is an excessive faith in science.
Yes. And they point to the fact that there are, in science, you never start from zero. You never start. There are axioms. There are.
Scientism is kind of like the idea that if science doesn't say it, it doesn't need to be said.
That's one of them, yeah. But they say that there are things that science has to assume as axiomatic that cannot be proved by the scientific method. Mm-hmm. Their claim, therefore, is that it's as faith-based as anything else.
But I have an argument for that. I don't know if you want to hear it.
Sure.
Sure.
The proof's in the pudding. You know what? If the system works, if it keeps generating useful information over and over again, then its fundamental assumptions have to be correct.
Because if they weren't,
well, that is evidence. People go, well, they have this these basic assumptions that are there in science, like the laws of nature are regular or have been the same for a long time,
yeah.
or that the universe can be understood by examining it and finding it. And those are assumptions that were made. And once upon a time, they might have been shown to be wrong. If they had gone into examining the universe with those ideas and come up empty, we would say they were wrong, but that's not what happened. So I would say there's pretty good evidence that the fundamental assumptions underlying the scientific method are valid.
And it's got a built-in methodology for self-correction. Mm-hmm. And when facts come to light that disprove the underlying assumption.
But they would argue that even your self-correcting experiment uses the same axioms as the original.
As a basis. Yeah.
The veracity of your observation, your belief in the...
You know, when I have this evolution versus creation discussion with people, I go, exactly what do you expect to say to the creationists? Exactly what are you expecting me to do? Are you expecting me to toss out an idea that unifies a mountain of evidence that makes predictions and that has improved the human condition for an idea that can't be used for anything?
Yeah.
Is that what you're... Even if you're right... Why would I do that?
It would be a paradigm shift.
Well, it's the empirical aspect. If it works, keep the idea. Right. You don't have to argue about how true it is. Does it keep working? Yeah. I don't need to go any further in my thinking. It works. Empirical adequacy.
Well, why do you think that creationists, no matter what you say or what evidence you put in front of them, refuse and maintain their stance?
You know, faith-based thought.
That's why they're called creationists.
Well, but
that's how faith works. You pick something to believe and believe it.
Well, my problem is.
But not often. I mean, but it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't have to.
Catholics believe in evolution, right?
Yes.
What? I'm sorry.
Yes, Catholics.
Many Christians accept evolution.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
But if you push them a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. No. It's not the same evolution you believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, really?
It's theistic evolution. Listen, where did your soul come from?
Show me it and I'll tell you.
I'm speaking from a believer's perspective. Okay? You were made in God's image. How did that happen? Darwin can't account for that. And he can't account for your soul. So their version of evolution has to be at least a little different.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thank you. Kaboosh. Thing started. Should happen. Now we have evolution.
Did you finish or did I interrupt you?
No, you did. I just always find these people that if you take out their belief, then they just end up as a puddle on the floor. And it is, you know, they need that crazy belief. You know, and sometimes, you know, I admire some things, sometimes about Catholicism or Judaism or something, because they have this faith that there's this otherness, you know, and so it maintains their ability. I just can't, for me, I understand why they hold on to it, because life is difficult to understand. Why the hell are we here? Why aren't we somewhere else? And what
well, they
is
built
it
a way
somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I wish I was somewhere else.
They also have the support of their fellow believers.
Oh, well, that's true. That's
I think that's really what keeps them from saying, well, you may have a point.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of factors. As someone who was born into a fundamentalist household and who managed to maintain a belief in creationism up to around the age of 40, which is no mean feat. You know, it's when it's specific to fundamentalist or really conservative religious circles, creationism is, and it's tied intrinsically to the Bible and belief in God, to a point where you can't have one without the other. You know, you look at the other religions that even inside of Protestantism, the more liberal theological religions, or Catholicism, and you just must assume that they've obviously lost their way because they've given up central tenets to the foundation of the universe and God's role in that. And it's so intrinsic that, yeah, you're basically to challenge them with any logic or reasonable basis. You're basically saying, here's reason, here's logic, and you must believe these things, but internally it's coming out in the form of, and then everything I've ever believed about God would be wrong. So that's just not something you can reason with. You have to come to an internal realization that, in fact, God is wrong, or that the Bible is incorrect or
infallible. I understand that.
When people say evolution of consciousness. It's the evolution of consciousness. And
what about it? What about it?
It's,
why'd you bring it up?
Because that's what he's talking about. The evolution of consciousness is simply not as evolved in some folks' minds. And they'll get there. They'll get there, but they're not there yet.
Well, they'll get where?
They'll get to understand.
They as individuals, or they as a group,
situational ethics, and all the stuff we're talking about.
I mean, I'm just as an example. My parents are going to go to their graves fully creationist. They're not about to have a moment of evolutionary.
They don't. They don't understand. They don't believe it's a story. They don't understand that part.
No. There's never have since even they my were religious, born again.
The people that raised me understood it was a story.
Yeah, and the majority of people, even in religion, do, but not inside the fundamentalist wing of evangelistic.
Well, all I can say is that Ken Wilber says that Ken Wilber says that, you know, the people in the Middle East, that they're Islam and the terrorists and all that stuff, were goat herders, you know, 100 years ago. And now they have jet airplanes and oil and money, and it's too short a span for their consciousness to evolve as they have been able to acquire the means to cause a lot of destruction in the world.
So they need an enlightenment. Islam needs an enlightenment.
I don't think that it's like that. I think it's just the way things grow.
Well, my dad grew up on a farm, and he's seen the same technological shifts and changes in his lifetime here in the United States. And I'm sending some of the moon and everything. And yeah, that's probably a similar paradigm shift and everything, but it didn't turn him into terrorists. Yeah.
The Sumerian culture about 7,000 years ago came up with a couple of concepts that still live today. One of them is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Mm-hmm. You still hear that. But here's the one that answers your question. If it's not documented, it does not exist. Mm-hmm. So that's the Bible.
I remember that for civilization and writing.
The written word.
The Sumerian?
Phil, can I pose a question?
Sure, yeah.
And that's the Bible.
I would like
to... The Mayan texts on the walls is the same thing.
My question to you is, do you think it is possible to build a comprehensive worldview using only science and rational thought?
Yes.
Had empathy.
Yeah, it took a long time.
You answer yes.
Yes. So, I don't think there's anything else.
What do you mean by comprehensive?
No. Pardon me?
By comprehensive, you mean answering all the questions?
You mean questions like morality?
Completely encompassing everything that is knowable? 30 seconds.
There's lots of nuances.
Yeah.
Without going into all the little twigs. To live a reasonable life, a reasonably successful life, to answer some of the questions that Phil has posed here, is science and reason enough? It is either complete or can be complete or incomplete. I think I hear Phil saying it can be complete. And once again, as
that wasn't the question you asked, though.
Can you form an a comprehensive worldview that is sufficiently complete based on science and reason alone.
I think yes.
That's adequate for you.
I think yes. And I'm not saying that I know everything.
It's a trick
yes.
Yeah.
It's not a trick question.
So watch
question.
Out. I would add two more elements to that, John.
It's a trick question.
It's not intended to be a trick question,
John. Well, how about the arts? Do we leave that out? Music?
No, I'm just posing a question.
Are you thinking that he is saying that you can't, that you can leave out the arts? Other things like that?
No.
Are they part of a worldview?
That's fine.
I would think so.
Absolutely they are.
Oh, we have to define
the world. I think the only thing, John, that I would say, you use the word complete. Complete.
Sufficient for
sufficient.
Him.
Sufficient.
Is that enough for Phil? That's all I'm asking.
Sufficient is better than
if I see a painting and I think that's beautiful.
Yes.
Do I think there's a scientific explanation behind my feeling that it's beautiful?
There might be.
Sure.
I do.
Sure.
You know, because I don't believe there's anything else that gives me that feeling. I think it can be explained by.
But is that part of your worldview?
Hmm?
Is that part of your worldview, considering a painting beautiful?
Well, sure.
Seriously.
I mean,
my worldview is our ideas.
That's more big picture.
What I would say is true about the world. You know, I guess I could say there is beauty in the world. That's part of my worldview, but...
Well, I was trying to give something intangible as an example.
Let me try to pose the question a little differently. All thinking has to start at some point. What would you see as the right factors for good thinking to start from?
All thinking has to start from what are the right factors?
Parents.
Well, as a non-believer in free will, I don't consider that I really control my thoughts. We'll get back to that. I'm a product of everything that's happened to me, everything I've learned, everything that's impacted me.
I'm still trying to understand.
I am not. What else is there? What else could there be?
Well, besides reason and science.
Well, I mean that's. I mean, I've been taught reason. I've been taught science. I mean, it didn't come to me. You know, I don't know about primitive man. How much they obviously. Observe some sort of logical consequence of the actions, right? But
the best answer I have to your question, what else is there, is at this time there is something else, but we do not know what it is.
Well, how do you know it exists?
because...
Okay, wait a minute.
You're asking, John, I think you're asking the same question that... is at the very bottom of what we're talking about.
I'm trying to get there. Yeah.
And that is there anything besides the properties of the matter from which emerge everything? And whether it's science or not, or whether we have enough science to understand it, doesn't matter. The question is there anything else? That's what we're trying to figure out. And if there is, as Phil says, what in the hell could it possibly be?
Well... There isn't actually a mathematical answer to that question, if you want to know. It was pondered by Gödel. And the answer is, there is no set of axioms, there's no set of fundamental beliefs, whatever you want to call them, that can be both consistent and complete.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either have consistency, which will, these are all the things I can derive from this set of beliefs.
Wasn't that Gödel?
Gödel,
yes.
Yeah. Gödel, well, it's German. Anyway, so you can either have consistency, which says these won't contradict each other, but there will always be a true statement that cannot be proven from these axioms.
Yes.
And so the answer is no, because there will be things that exist outside of these beliefs that are true but cannot be proven. So that's the answer.
But I would say you could still have a worldview.
Well, but there will be true things that exist outside of your worldview that won't be part of your worldview.
Yeah, you can still have a worldview, but it's not based on just science and reason.
You said comprehensive, which I would take as complete. So the answer is no.
Yeah.
And it's been proven
that. I'm trying to answer Phil's question, which is, why aren't there such big differences, right?
In what?
Generally.
In people's worldviews, in what?
Well, on just about anything, there are vast differences.
You mean you have opinion?
You know, an extreme example is your discussion on 9/11. I mean, that is an extreme example, but there is little agreement on much. And why is that?
Yeah, why is it? I really can't speak for the people who believe in the conspiracy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I can't see I can't see their view.
Yes.
So it's very difficult for me to argue passionately that this is the reason, you know, that I can only see mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said here, I think they're misguided.
What going back to our discussion in January, what would you see as the root cause for our different conclusion? You deny free will. I embrace free will. We both think we're rational. We both have no belief in the supernatural. Yet we have this fundamental difference that is pretty significant. And we weren't able to resolve it.
You guys have totally different definitions of free will.
Yeah. And we have a totally different experience.
Well, I'm not sure we do. I'm not sure that's the answer.
Well, we've got totally different experiences.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Different influences.
And definitions.
Yeah. Yeah, and the language problem too. I mean, that compounds it. But we have lived completely different lives.
Yes.
And we have, we've been influenced by people. I mean, I went to Sunday school as a kid. Why did I change? Who influenced me?
Yeah.
Did it arrive by non-divine means that I became an atheist? You know, why did I change? Something had to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think it arose spontaneously in me that either I've been taught to be critical, and maybe I applied that criticality to my thoughts. But it was still something that, you know, hit me, just like anyone else who's, extremely religious before you converted or before you deconverted or whatever. You know, you had your worldview was quite consistent in your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think most religious people are. People rationalize, people...
I think it's not thought about.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of avoidance. But
you're asking is when do people start to think? I don't know what the word is. It's more than think.
Once you begin to think, you're on the road already.
Once you start to examine...
Well,
as Plato says, examining your life and thinking... Uh-huh. And when you start to do that...
So do you think that's a natural thing that would happen to everybody?
No.
So why not?
It has to be taught.
Oh, that's random. That's also evolution of consciousness. But something triggers it. Who knows what?
Critical thinking has to be taught.
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
It has to be taught. It has to come in.
Critical thinking has to be taught. Yeah. It's a process you're trained in.
And a willingness.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah.
But you can learn it in college. Or,
that's where you do learn it.
Yeah, that's where I learned critical thinking.
That's true.
So you can learn it. It doesn't have to come spontaneously, revelation somehow.
You have to be able to ask, why?
Yeah.
What's going on? Why did you say that? Why do you want me to believe that? You have to be able to question. If you can't question, then you can't learn it.
Didn't you start, I would be interested at what age these people...
Coming out of the womb.
Yes.
Two. When you can say the word why.
When did you start to say...
Mommy, why did you do that? Why?
What space and time and why and that kind of question.
Well, God created man in his own image.
Huh?
And I right away thought, wait a minute.
That doesn't sound right.
Well, yeah. No. What happened to me?
I was in church and think. Talking to
exactly. Jesus loves me. You know who the hell is he? Why don't my parents love me?
I don't think I've answered your. I know I haven't answered your question to your satisfaction, but what do you think is lacking in my answer?
I am really honestly just trying to understand. Because I thought what we did in January was very interesting.
I still don't fully understand why we come to a different conclusion.
I see.
Yeah.
So I've been wrestling. I've been thinking about that a lot.
We had a debate on free will.
Free will. I think one of the problems is simply the vast amount of knowledge that exists. For example, if you look at neuroscience, you and I can both be interested in neuroscience and never read the same articles because there's so many of them.
Sure, yeah.
Or we may favor, for some reason, certain authors. So we can both value neuroscience and look to that to understand mind and understand free will, but we can be on separate little islands of knowledge that still have this huge ocean between them. So I think one of the fundamental problems, I think there are others, but I think one of the fundamental problems, why there are so many differences, is the amount of information available today is so vastly greater than the capacity of any single human mind that it's remarkable when there is as much agreement as there is. Not differences to me are not remarkable. It's remarkable when people agree. That's kind of where I'm at. I think there are other problems, but I know my knowledge of neuroscience is so tiny compared, because I've looked at what's the literature out there. Well, you could spend the rest of your life reading neuroscience, and you can't keep up. They're writing faster than you can read. So we can never have enough knowledge. And so I think that's one of the fundamental differences on anything. But
what you're saying is basically exposure.
What are we exposed to? But I'm also saying it's an unsolvable problem. It's something that the best we can do is understand and accept. We cannot solve it. Rational thought will not solve it. You can be rational, I can be rational, but we can never come to the same set of facts because the number of facts are too great. I can't absorb them all, you can't absorb them all, so we're dealing with a subset of all the facts available. I see it as an unsolvable problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, just what you just said, though, I find a little bit contradictory, and also yourself, that, you know, what we can get to know and understand, we accept. Not necessarily. We can understand it. Acceptance is something different. That we can understand where they are at that point, and maybe in neuroscience, but totally accepting it, that's different. That's kind of omega.
I said total acceptance. I certainly did not mean that.
But I find what Phil is saying is kind of contradictory because I do believe that in reason and science is an acceptance of an ability to have an aura of life. But free will, which you don't believe in, I find is contradictory to that. Because
it's worse than that. You can't even agree on a definition. Whenever you get into something fuzzy, like good or evil or free will or something like that, unless you can agree on a very specific definition of what it means, what it is, how you can determine, you know, who has it, who doesn't, what the specifics are, you're never gonna necessarily agree on even what it means. So
that's important, but I think that's a big part of the problem. But even if Phil and I did reach agreement on terminology, I think we would still have a fundamental difference. I don't think language is our biggest problem.
I think it is. Absolutely. If you could agree completely on what it is, how you measure it, how in a mathematical sense, in a physical sense, what it is, then you would almost certainly agree on whether exists or not.
I don't accept that.
Don't you think we're influenced in what we believe by our very basic study of world thinkers?
It depends on what it is you're talking about. If you're talking about does mass exist, I think if we all agree on what mass exists or not, we're going to agree on the definition. We're going to agree it exists. And if you can specify what free will is, whether it is to the level of a physical thing,
then you're going to agree.
No. But you can't define it that way.
Yeah, and if you both agree to a definition, mm-hmm. then you're saying it exists. I mean, if you both agree on a definition of mass, it's sort of self.
Yeah, if you can define it to a point where you can measure it and.
But you're saying, Henry, if I'm understanding you correctly, mm-hmm. that these essential differences are differences in the use of words. That if we have this exact same meaning of words mm-hmm. and we use rational thought, mm-hmm. we will come to the same conclusion.
I think so.
I understand that, and I don't disparage that. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with it, but I don't.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I don't agree with it either.
Yeah.
I think you could have exactly the same understanding of what free will is and have different opinions about it. And I have a third one.
Yeah.
It's the same as before, agnosticism.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
I don't feel like I need to choose or guess about something that I can't answer.
It's
unknowable.
But ultimately, my position is agnostic, but intuitively, I can't prove it, but intuitively, I feel I have free will. So no rational argument Phil is going to make is going to change that, because my intuition is that strong, my life experience is that strong. So intellectually, I'm an agnostic on the question of free will. But as I live my life, I live as if I do have free will.
Well, so do I.
Me too.
But remember, I intuitively
believe I have free will.
Remember, the part of the argument against free will is that it is an illusion. For you to say it feels like free will isn't really a rebuttal.
Because I do think I have free will.
I have a question for Sam Harris. If free will is an illusion, how can we prove that the feeling of not having free will is not an illusion? Once you start saying something is an illusion,
mm-hmm.
how do you know that is the illusion and not its opposite?
You could argue that point too. You could propose that's the truth. That what you just said what I said is the illusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
there's no resolving that.
Well, there's one phrase that people use that just sometimes I want to jump up and choke on, and that is, well, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, your husband's dying of cancer, everything happens for a reason. And that's kind of like an indoctrination that there is no free will, that things happen because there's some power that directs it.
That's what we're doing.
And I just gag when I hear that, because that's, it's just not, that it totally to me is an illusion.
It's contextual.
It is contextual. Uh-huh.
The thing that drives
people with these ideas is fear. Absolute fear.
That's where religion comes from.
And that's why we're in this horrifying, desperate pattern continually.
It's a good thing humanity, to be in fear.
That
be
fear to grab onto. Well, you know, the idea of fascism or whatever. Or, you know, my mother-in-law was a Roman Catholic and crying because her grandchildren she wasn't going to see in heaven because we didn't bring them up that way. And so she was driven by fear with that kind of thing. And so Stephen said something about what we were talking and he injected the word empathy.
I wanted to inject one other thing too, but go ahead.
Because I think without empathy, that it's really a desperate world. And that's what we're feeling now, is within cultural changes, is a lack of empathy.
John, I think you brought us back around to the original topic, which is not going to believe that there is no free will. You don't care what Phil tells you.
I've heard that evolution is not possible if there is free will.
Can I?
Is that? because it applies to blind forces, blind physical forces.
Yeah.
So if you can, it wouldn't be blind if you had free will. You could.
Oh, there's two kinds of
evolution.
Non-thinking processes that are going on in evolution, as opposed to thinking people.
You're
right. You have to make a distinction between biological evolution, psychological evolution, cultural evolution.
Biological evolution.
Yeah. But biological evolution, it works on the body, but there's also, now we're into a stage where our minds have developed intellect, and now we're jump-starting all that.
So free will could be a part of the next step of evolution, if it existed.
Well, either free will or the illusion of free will does exist. It's here.
We get to a point and then you kill it, you take it right to the bottom.
Can I pick up on something Valerie said? Because I think it does relate to part of the answer and to the 9/11 discussion. Valerie talked about fear, and my response is fear is very significant, and we all have fear. The reason we have fear is because our ancestors who lacked fear got eaten and died. So fear and anxiety is the end result of successful evolution. So all of us have fears, the degree that we are aware of them and how we mitigate them. It is, from an evolutionary point of view, unnatural not to have fears and anxieties. Believing things, you need something to contain that fear. Some people latch on to conspiracy theories. If you get back behind that, there's often fears. Some people grab onto religion. It mitigates fears. Dare I say it, some people grab onto science and reason, and it mitigates fear. So I think this whole idea of fear and how it plays out is pretty significant. It
absolutely.
I think it is at play in every single human being, because we're all the product of evolution. Mm-hmm. So we better be fearful or we wouldn't have got here. And that's hard now for a conscious mind to deal with.
Yeah, it's a question of how the fear is manipulated.
It can be manipulated. We're seeing lots of that. It can be suppressed.
You need to jump in.
I know we're about out of time. I just had one final thought. If we don't have free will, how can we be free thinkers?
Good one, Glenn.
You may need to rethink the name of the group. I'm just saying.
The illusion of free thinking?
Not
free thinking. I agree with the illusion of free thinking.
Not free thinking.
Glenn thought.
We're free to recognize it's an illusion. We're free to think that.
Illusory thinkers.
Free mental.
I lean your way on that. What's on that topic. Toward free will being an illusion. Yeah. But I can't come to a conclusion, so that's why I say agnostic.
Okay.
Well, Phil, when you did your open circle presentation, you said there's something that precedes free will.
No.
Well,
no. There's something that precedes decision.
Sorry.
Something that precedes decision, right? That we're unconscious of.
Which you were describing as the free will. It was a cause and effect thing.
We all make decisions. I'm saying there are things that happen before the decision that we're not aware of, that when it happens, and our consciousness finally gets the message from below, we say, oh, well, that was me. I did that.
Phil, are you in a line with where Stephen and I are? Ultimately, we are agnostic. When you look at the alternatives, we may have intuition that takes us in a... Are you agnostic on the question, or are you certain that of your answer?
As certain as I can be. I mean, I don't see a crack. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's incredible.
So you're quite certain you have free will, or you do
as
not have
certain
free will?
As certain as I can be. I'm more confident in my belief that it's an illusion than it is not. Okay. I can't imagine a mechanism.
Yes.
I can't imagine a mechanism that's known that can explain your view.
Let me ask you this, John. If an idea is generated outside of consciousness in some neural circuitry and delivered to your awareness and to your musculature at the same time, and you act on it, and there's nothing obstructing your ability to
to do what it is you've just been instructed to do? Is that free will?
Free will, to me, the way I'm using free will
is... Well, can you yes or no that one? Is that free will? It
can be a definition of free will.
You would call that free will?
No, I wouldn't, but it can be.
Okay, but we should agree on a definition. We need to agree on a definition, as Henry pointed out.
Yes, yes. Free will, for me, is simply the ability to make a free choice that is completely, not completely, that's not the right word. It has an element that lacks causality. Okay? I'm a free agent, and brain is significant, culture is significant. There are many things that mitigate free will, but the essence of free will is something remains that is truly free.
It's a
unmitigated by my genetic makeup, by my knowledge. I am free to make a choice, unmitigated by everything. All those mitigating factors are extremely important.
But what I just described feels like being free to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I suddenly get a message from the hypothalamus that I'm thirsty, and I go to the refrigerator and get a drink. Is that free will? It wasn't my idea.
The freedom is whether you act on it or not.
Well, if that's all that you mean by free will, is the experience of wanting something and having an unimpeded ability to make it happen, then yes, that happens.
That's not all I'm saying.
Okay.
I am saying that there is, and it's an unknown. I'm certainly not attributing, we don't know. We until we solve the problem of consciousness, how the brain generates consciousness, I don't believe we can solve, ultimately, the question of free will. The two, to me, are intertwined. So I don't know why I have free will. But we do not know how the brain, some people believe they have the answers, but I do not think there is an explanation of how the brain generates consciousness. So the brain somehow generates a consciousness that has an element that allows it to act completely free of all scientific laws and principles.
Free of reason? Free of reason?
It can, yes. You can freely be irrational. There's lots of irrationality. You can be rational or irrational. But there is something that is undetermined.
But you can't fly to the moon.
No, you can't.
Because you want, you've got
exactly.
The will to train.
There's
so
huge
you are
mitigation.
Constrained. You are constrained. So,
by many things. The constraints are enormous. All I'm saying is that the constraints do not explain away free agency. Something remains is free.
How would you input the word, the concept of creativity, which we all, as artists, musicians, we operate on that. We live on it. Would you call that free will?
Yeah, I would.
You would. You think that comes from?
I think there's an element of free will there. Mm-hmm. You can paint anything you like. There is nothing making you paint a certain thing.
No, it's where you get the ideas to do new music, new art.
Oh, so you're saying that something.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
You cannot be free of your experience. You cannot be free.
Well, you're arguing
of
what he's saying.
All your knowledge. You're not free of all of those things. All I'm saying, all of those things do not totally explain what we observe and experience.
I would say creativity is different from will.
Yeah,
they're different mental functions.
Yeah.
Creativity and will are different mental functions.
Mm-hmm. How?
There are different kinds of things. You can do one, you can do the other, you can do both, you can do neither.
And something from the outer world inspires it or something like that.
You're saying that there is something outside of neurons and electrons and protons that forms free will.
I'm saying you're adding words that I would not add.
Okay, so
there is
something outside
of... If we go down to what those neurons are made of, okay, we follow that chain. Those neurons... are made out of molecules, that are made out of atoms. Those atoms are made out of electrons,
right.
And ultimately our knowledge now down takes us down to quarks.
Right.
We do not today know fully what a quark is.
Right.
So everything that is built from that has an element of unknown.
Okay.
We don't know what it is.
No, but at that level it doesn't matter. When we get to the macro level, the question is it a deterministic universe or not?
No, it's
yeah,
not.
That's the question.
It's not deterministic, but let's say...
Well, why not?
Because it's quantum mechanical. But
that's on another place. That does not affect our day-to-day.
But let's say it is. Let's say quarks were the ultimate level. Would there then have to be something else in order to have free will?
This quark that you're talking about, is that... Are you putting it...
Fundamentally,
I'm saying, right from the very start, there are unknowns.
No, let's say we're at the end. Quarks are the last.
I don't think there is an end, but
let's say it was.
I can use my imagination.
And would there then have to be something else in order to have free will?
Well, I don't know what it takes to generate free will. It's an unknown.
It's a non-deterministic universe.
There's a lot of things we don't know. One of the most significant things we don't know is how consciousness emerges from the brain.
Okay, that's a different question.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm saying it's possible. I'm not asserting this, mm-hmm. but I'm saying it's possible. There may be a connection between the unknowns at the fundamental level of particles mm-hmm. and what ultimately is built from that. I'm not saying they are connected. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it is possible. There are people trying to make those connections. It's very interesting. For me, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't know either, but here's what I believe.
Yeah.
And I think this is easier to believe than what you're saying. And that is that everything is finite, actually. Mm-hmm. It's not, there's no infinite, you know, going down infinite levels. Everything's finite, even consciousness. There's only a finite number of thoughts that you can have. There's only a finite number of states in the universe. There's only a finite number of things that you can experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not infinite. It doesn't go down all the way. It's just a very, very large number.
Okay.
A larger number than you can write down,
okay.
ever.
Okay.
And so consciousness is not something magical. It's just something that is a very, very large number.
But I'm not saying it is something magical. I'm saying it's something unknown. And I agree with everything you said, but it doesn't answer my question.
It's a very large number that we can't write down. And
But so what?
That's
I agree.
Just,
it's a very... So what?
It's finite.
So that's all there is to it.
That's not an explanation.
It's a huge number of states that we can't. It's just a huge number of states.
Well, yeah, but a huge number of states, which I don't disagree with, does not explain the illusion or the lack of illusion of free will.
It could be the source of the illusion.
It could be. We don't know what the source is.
Well, it's the fact that there are so many states and we cannot nail it down, right?
Well. That is a possible explanation, but I'm not convinced it's the explanation.
I can't connect any of this to free will.
Well, you know, we're talking about free will, and of course that's an individual kind of concept. And from the point of birth, you don't have free will. And it depends on what kind of environment you're born into and what you're indoctrinated with. The Eastern world is totally different from the Western world. And so, for me, I feel I have free will because there became a deterministic point in my life that I decided on what. But I did understand living in the Eastern world how much free will I had not had because of the indoctrination of what the Western world indoctrinated me with, considering the environment we left to right. If we come to a fork in the road, we'll always, in general, take the right. Unless you're left-handed, you'll take the left. For, and you don't realize that you're doing these things when you're born in the Western world. When you live in the Eastern world, where there's other concepts of no future tense and other kinds of things, then you begin to challenge yourself as to what you are doing and are you conflicted? And that's where I came into the understanding of of the conflict that I had from being born in the Western world and then having to try to transition into the Eastern world and still understand that I have that free will. I have that free will.
Free will is the ability to go from one state to another state. That's all it is. Go from state A to state B.
That doesn't sound like a complete definition.
Uncaused?
However you get there. But that's what free will is. You go from state A to state B.
Well,
there's nothing.
How do you define free will?
That's
how about like going from asleep to awake? Is that free will?
You go from awake state to sleep state.
We're not talking about the same thing anymore.
Stephen, but that's just a physical concept.
That's all it is.
Hungry,
there's no more to it.